Welcome to We Mentor Mondays podcast with Nancy. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery. Learn something new from our stories today. Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Today in the studio, we have Dan Prosser, author and CEO of CEO Blueprint with Scott Plum. So for more than 45 years, Dan Prosser has been a successful entrepreneur, CEO, mentor, and coach, team educator, software developer, speaker, and author. His work with clients has created Fortune 500 to 5,000 fastest growing and best place to work companies. Dan has served as chief strategist on board of directors for nonprofits. His independent research into best place to work companies has uncovered a unique understanding of the distinctions that exist within these exceptional workplaces, distinctions that make them achieve 2 to 3 times the growth of non-best companies. In 2015, he published his book, 13ers, Why Only 13% of Companies Successfully Execute Their Strategy, and How Yours Can Be One of Them. Dan has lived in Silverthorne, Colorado, in the heart and soul of Rocky Mountains, and in Houston, Texas, and recently has moved back to Minnesota. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad to be in Minnesota.
Good. Well, how are you feeling in this moment?
Well, I'm feeling energized. I'm feeling excited. I'm like, I wonder what do you want to talk about? And I'm ready.
Good. Excellent. All right. Well, can you describe a little bit about your work and how you got to Minnesota?
Sure.
Why are you back here?
Yeah.
What brought you here?
So I left here in 1983. I thought, well, you know, I needed a new something else where people didn't know me. And that's literally what I decided.
Okay.
Like, and somebody offered me a job while I was doing a project in Houston and moved me, and I never looked back. I thought, I'll just live the rest of my life in Houston. But at the same time, I bought a second home up in Colorado, up in the mountains, and I would go up there for the summers. And it was really funny because it was my dog that really kind of encouraged me to go there, because he would literally cry.
Aww.
When we left Colorado.
Oh.
We'd come back to Houston, and he would literally have an emotional experience. I thought, you know, we ought to look at that. So I sold the home in Houston after being there for 33 years and 33. And then we didn't really have to move because we had a full house up there. And
yeah.
Then we were up there, and when my book came out, and I didn't expect the book to be what happened to it. It got named as one of the top 5 business books in the world. Kind of.
Excellent.
Where did that come from?
Yeah, right.
And it got summarized by all the summary companies that are online, and it became a bestseller on Amazon. And I found myself kind of stranded and stuck up in the mountains and having to drive to Denver or take 4 hours to get to the airport and go to New York doing projects there. And so we decided we'd take a look and see if there was another place we'd go. We looked at Austin, Texas, so we looked going back. And I was here last summer and spent 2 weeks every morning and some afternoons going to BNI's, you know.
Oh, yeah. Business Networking International?
Yes.
Yeah.
And so every morning I'd get up at, you know, go to a 7 o'clock. And I found that I really liked the people, and I hadn't had much contact with people here other than my family.
Oh.
So.
Because you grew up here.
I grew up here in
Lake
Minnetonka.
Yeah.
My dad is still here.
Okay.
He's 93 this October. He's an amazing guy. He's, you know, kind of been my inspiration for so many years,
yeah.
My whole life.
Yeah.
It was a neat experience because we stayed with him while we were looking up here. And my wife, who is a Texan, decided that she would love to live here. Oh. I said, are you sure? Winter? He said, well, it can't be any worse than Colorado.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's a mild winters here. You know, we really found a different Minneapolis than I left.
Oh.
You know, very much more developed downtown.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I knew that they were starting to convert some of the railroad areas to these
light
greenways
rail.
And put in light rail. And this is an amazing city. This really is. I mean, I've been all over the country, and I really didn't expect to find myself back here, but this is quite an extraordinary city. I love the people.
Oh, great.
And you know, when you go to a new town, you get to redefine yourself.
Right.
You don't get
always
defined. Yeah, and I was in Houston for so many years, and people knew me to be in the technology business. And so it was very nice to move here and get to go out and do something brand new.
Yeah.
Something I hadn't experienced before.
Sure, sure. Yeah. So at these BNI meetings, mm-hmm. A lot of entrepreneurs are using the business networking international, is it?
Yeah.
As a way to get plugged into the business community and also to meet lots of different people.
Yeah.
So when you were in these groups, what were you promoting? Were you promoting your book or some of the work that you've done in the past?
Well, really both, but primarily my book. I was really not promoting per se. I was really going to get a read on what the community was like and what people were like in business here.
Oh, I
you know,
see.
How open and how generous and, you know, is it a match for the kind of work that I would really want to bring to Minneapolis and area.
Oh, nice. Okay.
And, you know, and I'm not just limited to Minneapolis. You know, I have clients other places.
Yeah.
So.
That's terrific.
But it's nice. It was real different to experience that. I didn't expect it at all.
Yeah. Well, that's a pleasant surprise.
But I'm not the same person as when I left, so that's probably why. It's probably me.
Okay.
More than anything. Much different person today.
I see than
the guy who left here.
Yeah. So let's go back a little bit. So you grew up here. What did your dad do?
Well, my dad
how
was
big of a family were
my
you
dad's
in?
A mechanical engineer. Okay. I'm the oldest of five kids. Everybody is entrepreneurial, all five of us. He worked for Green Giant and 3M and in the consulting business, and then he decided that he was going to get into the staffing business, and he bought a staffing business that had been started in the 20s, and he expanded on that and then moved into some home care type staffing. And from there, he discovered an interesting diversion, I want to say, into workers' compensation. He began to understand the impact that worker injury had on people, and that people literally got addicted to the pain that resulted from that. And so he started a company called RTW, which stood for Return to Work. And in that company, he developed also an insurance company. And so he began to insure workers' compensation policies, provide the policy, and then manage people's wellness. So back to wellness from injury. And it was a very, very successful endeavor. It took it public in 1995.
Okay.
And it was successful. And then it was bought by a company and taken private back in 2007.
Oh.
It was very exciting as a family because we were all part of it. And we all participated in the—
And your dad must have been ready. How did he experience the going the public route?
Well, I wasn't living here at the time, but as he describes it, it was a real challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to go and present yourself, and you've got to be, and you have to do it in a very unique way. It's not like just a sales call.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
you're selling the market on something that's quite unique, quite different, hadn't been heard of. It's what I call in my business a reverse salient. You know, reverse salient is a concept that I use with my clients. And, you know, it was what he discovered was a weakness in the system of workers' compensation and reverse salience are weaknesses in systems. And that's where the opportunities show up.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, so, you know, when I work with clients, I actually, the first thing I go to understand is where is the weakness in the system that they are addressing?
Yeah.
You know, which I don't really cover in my book. In the updated version coming out probably by the end of the year.
Yeah.
I'll cover this, which is something I've been working on since writing the book.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the way you want, the direction you wanted to take this call, conversation.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that it's showing too that, you know, once you write a book doesn't mean it's really necessarily the end.
No.
You know, that there's a process that, you know, you keep going on.
Yeah. I've learned a lot since I've written the book.
Yeah. You what know. Has been the most biggest lesson that you've learned or aha moment?
That people actually wanted to hear from me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's actually...
That is really surprising. I mean, because you've been out there coaching and helping other people.
Yeah. I never saw myself as an author.
Okay.
At the same time, I had done a tremendous amount of writing. And even starting back in high school, Minnetonka High School, my favorite teacher and the only class, probably the only class, this is the first time I ever said this publicly, but probably the only class I got better than a C in was English and writing. Mm-hmm. And I got A's in college.
Oh.
Didn't get anything else, but
what did you take
bad
up
in
studying?
School, you know?
what did you take up studying in college?
Business.
Okay.
Yeah. Business is boring as all get out.
Yeah.
You know? It's not at all what I ended up finding out how it was, but
yeah,
you know, you still study it.
Yeah, right, and look at it from different perspectives.
Yeah, yeah.
But did you feel like getting a business degree, you felt like it was different because of your entrepreneurial upbringing, and it wasn't about entrepreneurship, it was about established companies?
Well, I wasn't the kind of guy who really got a lot out of school.
Okay.
It didn't hold my interest.
Yeah.
And I struggled with it. I struggled all the way through college. I didn't finish college because I want to go out and start a business. I want to go out and get to work.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I saw my life as being. I did go to work for my dad for a few years.
Okay. And then, in which of the companies?
Well, in the staffing company, staffing business.
All right.
I worked for him and—
I remember Dolphin Staffing.
Yeah, they were a competitor of mine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the Dolphin family.
Okay.
They're amazing people.
Okay, yeah.
You do remember them, huh?
Yeah,
yeah.
I do. And I remember going in there and getting some part-time work when I first came down to the cities from Bemidji.
Yeah.
So,
well, when I actually launched out into my own first business when I was 26, it was kind of a break with my dad for a year, and learned a lot. Had to learn a lot. And
where'd you get the startup monies?
Yeah, that is the weirdest thing in the world. I probably learned my biggest business lesson by having no money.
Yeah.
You know, you need capital? What would you need capital for? Well, how about to finance the payroll?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
My business was a temporary staffing business.
Okay.
It was light industrial. And I did business beginning the first day in business because, as I mentioned, the reverse salient, I discovered a weakness in the system, and the weakness was the quality of people. And so I set standards, and I didn't let people come to work for me that couldn't drive a car. So you couldn't get to, I put myself off the bus lines. You couldn't get to me on the bus. So you had to drive, and you had to have, you know, had to be quality. So I upgraded the quality, and people wanted that, and because it was a weakness, and so it was kind of fun. But it was also a rude awakening when, you know, I had to finance the payroll and people didn't pay me.
Oh, okay.
That was interesting.
A little,
And I'm 26, 7 years old.
Yeah.
I'm like trying
to
figure business out. It's like, you know, what's really interesting is how many clients I've had who've had the same – ridiculous thinking as I did.
Oh, how many?
Many.
Yeah.
Too many.
So it's
way
common.
Too many. It's common. People don't, they don't think about it.
All the details of what it takes to run a business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The principles and the basic principles and practices.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was a really interesting education.
So you learned quickly on the fly.
Yeah.
We mentor. And did you find borrowing money was pretty easy? Because, I mean, you're 26, you don't have a lot of assets.
It was not, well, I had accounts receivable.
Okay.
From good companies.
Okay.
From really good companies.
So that's Pillsbury how you backed your loan.
That's how I would back my loan. But banks will only take you so far.
Yeah.
Then you have to turn to factoring.
Yeah.
And that is really a crazy concept. It was back then. It's not so much now. It's a little more common.
For those who don't know what factoring is, why don't you explain a little bit about how it works? Because it is about your accounts receivable.
It is about accounts receivable. It's borrowing a percentage of your accounts receivable so that you can pay your bills and pay your payroll. In my case, I had 250 employees.
Oh, wow. You grew really fast.
I grew really fast. See, and
So how did you grow? Like from your first to second year and third year?
Well, it was by the second year that we had 250.
Oh, my God.
Employees. And it was interesting because it was during the Carter administration, which a lot of your listeners probably don't even know what that was like. But that was back in the days of it was a shortage of gas, and then unemployment was pretty bad, and Congress passed a law that said that you could they would compensate you. They literally compensated you $1 of credit, tax credit, against every dollar of payroll that you paid out over the previous year.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, it was amazing. I didn't pay taxes for 15 years.
Wow.
Because it was just a windfall. Just fell into it, you know?
Yeah.
So that was the biggest payoff. That was the big payday right there.
For 15 years.
Yeah. That was really from a dumb kid that's trying to start a business.
And then what happened?
Well, I sold that business to my silent partner who had the cash to run the business.
So when did your silent partner come on board?
Well, he came on board in the beginning.
Okay.
Yeah, he was in the beginning. He funded some of the startup of the original business.
So along with the bank.
Along with the bank, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we didn't have much, believe me.
Okay. So did he take a percentage then, or did he, because he was silent and he was working in, was he working in the business?
No, he didn't work in the business.
He just, like a silent, regular silent partner, as they give you the money and let you do the work.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was just an investor.
Okay.
But he was a silent partner.
Okay. And then eventually, so he just hung in there with you?
Yeah, he just hung in there with me, and then, we worked through the problems, and, it was probably his first business too, as I recall.
Okay. So you would have regular meetings with him to talk through things you were going through, or was he your mentor? Well,
now
support,
you're asking me to think back to the 70s, 1976. I don't know.
Give me a close guess.
I mean, I had one of the first computers that did my payroll. It was a Wang computer.
Oh yeah, I remember those.
It was about the size of this table, and it had a monitor and a, listen to this. It had a 20 meg, and maybe that's wrong, 20K disk drive, which was about as big as bigger than a dinner plate.
Yeah.
And it had a removable one, and this was amazing.
Yeah.
Back in those days.
Yeah.
There weren't computers on anybody's desk back in the 70s.
Yeah, right. You went to places where they had a computer. Well, actually, they're mostly computer games that I remember playing on in the 70s.
Yeah, I don't remember that even.
Ms. Pac-Man.
Yeah. Something like that. Ms. Pac-Man, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, those are the days.
Yeah, right. Okay, so with your silent partner, So you must have had lots of conversations. How organized they were, it was probably based on need.
I was a terrible, terrible businessman.
Okay.
I was learning. I was learning on the job, you know, asking whoever I could, you know, tell me what I should be doing, to ask the banker. I had a good banker.
Okay.
For as long as he was allowed to give me, you know, credit. So I had some people who advised me. I got through it.
Okay.
You know, I knew how to sell. That was my big deal. Okay. I knew how to sell.
And
I knew that I had to tell a good story. And I had a good story. And people bought it.
Yeah.
And I delivered.
Yeah.
You know,
the main thing is you delivered.
I delivered.
Delivered on what you sold.
Yeah.
So people believed in you.
Yes. And they
and
kept
you earned
buying
credibility.
From me. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was a key to success for you.
Right. Right. So I was only in that business for about 3 years, but it was one of those
businesses. Wow, it really grew quick and fast.
Oh,
and then
it really
your
was.
Silent partner, was he interested in buying from the start, or because you guys didn't know where it was going? He was,
you know, I didn't take a lot of money from him as a result of the company needing capital.
Okay.
So the company didn't have a lot of value, but we still did a lot of business.
Yeah.
It was amazing. But, you know, I think what it did was it put me in a position to begin looking at my life and what I wanted to really start looking at getting into. And I had a choice at that point. You know, I sold the business, got a little money, took 6 months off, and began looking at what do I want for the rest of my life? And there were two things that popped out back in those days. And the one was joint replacement.
Oh, yeah.
You know, shoulders. And I don't think they were doing a lot of hips, but knees. I guess they were doing hips. But joint replacement. And they needed people who could sell and who could advise. And I was kind of interested in that. But then I discovered that the telecommunications industry was changing.
Yeah.
So companies were coming in and providing alternative telecommunications systems. This was brand new.
1984, there was deregulation of phones.
Yeah, and I got into it in 1979.
Okay, so before the field deregulated.
Before the field deregulated and before AT&T divested. So I went through deregulation and divestiture.
Okay.
And that created a new reverse salient, a new weakness in the system. So the telecommunications system had these weaknesses. They were buying new telephone systems were available through Northern Telecom, through Rome, you know, and those are the companies that were making the most money in this new telecommunication space. And they were competing against Ma Bell, as we called it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the operating companies, Southwestern Bell was here. Quest didn't come about until much later. And when Joe Nocio went to work for Quest in Denver and went to prison afterwards for inside trading, if you remember that. But we don't need to go down that tunnel.
Okay.
But I knew, I knew Joe.
Yeah.
What I saw was I was selling telephone systems. And I got into that industry. And what I saw was that when you bought a phone system, most people didn't know, one, how to buy it. They didn't know how to manage it, what to do with it.
Yeah.
You know, how to make it work for them. And then now they were dealing with an equipment provider, a local telephone provider, Southwestern Bell, who wasn't happy about this whole situation. And now they were also buying long distance on a banded fashion. So back in those days, there wasn't what we have today, like all distance, which is, you know, no cost.
Mm-hmm.
There was, you bought bands of service and you had to maybe buy it from different people. So that's a weakness because every time that there was a problem, the different vendors would point fingers at each other.
So the problem wouldn't get solved would give you the runaround, which is where the frustration was for a lot of people.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, you know, I could start a company and manage telecommunications, but I didn't know anything about that. And
but you're a quick learner and you're an entrepreneur, and that's what entrepreneurs do.
Yeah, and I talked to a company called Jelco Corporation, which is – company that a lot of people here would remember. They were a leasing business.
Okay.
They were a vehicle leasing business. They also were a travel business. And they were over in Eden Prairie, and I went to work for them as their first telecommunications manager, and I learned telecom management for a three-year period. And from there, somebody offered me a job in Houston.
Okay.
And I thought, well, I'm going to go back and sell telecom systems and for a little while before I do this, get a little more immersed into it.
Sure.
And
were you married at this time, or were you?
No, I wasn't married.
Okay.
No, I was not married. And I'm trying to think back. So this company offered me a job. I had a friend working for their Dallas office, and I went and interviewed with the Houston office, and they offered me a job right on the spot and said, we'll move you, and when can you start?
Oh, awesome.
How about a month from now?
You know? Okay.
So I moved to Houston in 1983, early. I think it was, I started the 3rd of January, 1983, in my new job.
Okay.
And it was really a lot of fun, but it was really scary too. New city, big city.
Yeah.
And I sold a big system finally to Union Carbide, $2 million system, and the commission on it was substantial.
Okay.
I said, now's the time.
Yeah.
I got the money. So I did. I started it on my dining room table.
Okay.
And there again, people like, oh, yeah, you know, I really have this problem. You're right. You know, you'll handle it for me. We'll take care of it. So I started providing that, and it was during that time that I met somebody, and they were a friend of mine. And she was managing the hotel over at the University of Houston, Hilton College.
Okay.
And she introduced me to a professor, and that professor introduced me to the reverse salient.
Okay.
Yeah. I didn't know what I was seeing.
Weakness in the system.
Yeah, the weakness in the system. He said, there's 8 people out there who see the same thing simultaneously as you do. You better get out there fast.
Oh.
And I thought, for years and years, I thought, 8 people? I wonder who those 8 people were. You know, but that's what he told me. And
yeah, right.
So I was like, oh, okay. Let's find out about that. Then and over that period of time, I would, there wasn't the internet. It wasn't until about 1995 that I discovered that people had actually written about this concept.
Okay.
Called it the reverse salient and described the weaknesses in the system. And it really went back to the electrification of the United States. So all of that, that was really kind of the start of the whole thing that I began to take forward starting in 1985. I saw this reverse salient. I developed the business. I got into the hotel industry. All my clients were hotels.
Okay.
All over the United States.
Hmm.
And because they sold telephone system services in rooms back in those days. And when you carried a cell phone, it was $1.95 per minute to call outside long distance, whereas they made a tremendous amount of money. My first client was a Four Seasons hotel and the Houstonian Hotel, two big 5-star hotels that were, making more than $1 million a year on telephone resale, as long as their systems were working. And that was what we brought to the table, was optimizing their system and then managing it so that they never, ever let their clients down,
So everyone could have access to
access to it, but also they were always producing money.
Yeah.
So that was really the beginning of 13ers.
Okay.
I began to really look at how people manage their business. And I discovered one day at a conference, as I describe in the book, this guy came up and talked to me, told me that, he'd checked out of a hotel that morning, and he said, I know what their problem is. I checked out of the room, and I looked at my bill, and I didn't make that phone call. I said, I didn't make this phone call, I don't think. And she said, oh, don't worry. The woman behind the desk, don't worry. We'll take care of it, and they'll take it off. We'll take it off. And she said, won't you get in trouble? No, she said, they don't care. Those three words, they don't care, lit me up. I said, what if everybody was saying they don't care? What if everybody was in a conversation they don't care.
Yeah.
Well, I had a friend in Houston that managed the guest quarters hotel, and I went to him and said, listen, I've got this idea that your business is really being run by some conversation that people are having that is not true, that they think that, you know, they'll give money back at the front desk because they don't think you care. Well, let's test this.
Yeah.
So we tested it by measuring at the front desk how much money was literally being given back. And during that time, we would make a graph and we'd put it on the wall, but we never told anybody what we were doing. We just put a graph on the wall and labeled it money returned to the front desk, money refunded at the front desk. And what happened was that information on the wall that people had to pass and had to see altered their behavior.
Yeah.
So, you know, I came up with this idea that information, if you present it in the right way, will alter people's behavior.
Yeah. This is a nice place to close out our conversation. Will you come back for another one?
Sure.
Okay. And we'll go into a deeper conversation about 13ers, because you're just, this is a nice introduction to it.
Yeah, great.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
Thanks for being here.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, photographer, great friend, and we'll see everybody next week. Do you want to promote your business and grow in your leadership skills? Here are a few ways you can promote your business and get leadership help through We Mentor, Inc. You can be a podcast guest. Challenge yourself to share who you are on air. We'll help you out. Secondly, you can sponsor our podcast program. You can invest a small fee to have you and your company name announced at the beginning and end of one or more shows. The third way that you can promote your business and grow in your leadership skills is you can set up an individual strategy session to do work one-on-one with me, focusing on specific life and leadership issues and skills you want to acquire. Or the fourth way is you can join an entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab. These ELM labs start throughout the year. They are small groups of 5 to 9 business owners who are out to profoundly shift their lives and lead with authenticity. In 2016, I became a registered yoga instructor and mindfulness meditation teacher. I also became certified online with Brené Brown's Brave Leadership and Courage Works courses to learn an effective process of being all in, falling, getting up, and trying again. In turn, I can mentor others in how to dare greatly and rise strong. I feel better equipped to help you forge ahead in these times of great uncertainty. Our Entrepreneurial Leadership and Mentoring Lab process is an integrated approach to leadership development. We do yoga, meditation, and leadership revolution skill setting. Yes, we will help you learn how to strengthen your body, strengthen your mind, and increase your emotional stamina as part of our leadership development process, along with learning about real-world business planning and strategic planning. We do what works. Get involved, get started. You can reach me at 612-804-8920 or go to wementor.com and connect with us. Lastly, if you like our podcast program, help us keep it going. You can donate to our program. Just go to the wementor.com website, click on Buy button, and fill in the donation amount that you would like to contribute. We appreciate any and all contributions. See you next week.